From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letzi. If this is what your kids hear while they're at school, then this is what they're breathing.
That is the diesel. That's the pollution.
And that pollution can make kids sick.
Well, the way I breathe, it just feels uncomfortable sometimes. You just feel like a struggle. I want to do something that's supposed to be easy. I wish I could breathe a lot more better.
So whose fault is it?
As a mother, you see a child not breathing, you be like, why? Why me? What did I do? It's not your fault. It's not.
And why are millions of kids going to schools along some of the country's busiest roads? Next on Reveal.
Support for Reveal comes from Audible. Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook with a 30-day trial membership. Just go to audible.com/reveal and browse the unmatched selection of audio programs. Download a title and start listening. It's that easy. Reporters in our newsroom are reading Homage to Catalonia by George Orwell. Go to audible.com/reveal. That's audible.com/reveal and get started today.
From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. A soccer game has broken out on a frozen school playground in Newark, New Jersey. The kids are competing hard. Their blood is pumping. They breathe heavily. Right now, they think their biggest problem is scoring a goal. But actually, a much bigger problem is the air they're breathing. Because right next to this field, separated by a chain-link fence, there's this. A steady stream of heavy trucks. Delivery trucks, container trucks, garbage trucks, you name it. The scent of smoky diesel fuel hangs in the air. The pollution from all that traffic is especially dangerous to kids because research suggests it can stunt lung growth, cause learning problems, heart disease, and raise the risk of cancer. The Center for Public Integrity, a nonprofit newsroom, partnered with us to find out how many kids are going to schools where they're exposed to these toxic fumes. We mapped out every public school in the country and found that 1 in 11 are within 500 feet of a heavily trafficked road. Now, that pollution spreads into classrooms of nearly 4.5 million kids. For a deeper look, Reveal's Fernanda Camarena takes us to Newark, New Jersey, in the working-class neighborhood of Ironbound.
The final bell rang about a half hour ago at the Hawkins Street School. And now, fourth and fifth graders meet in an after-school program.
Everyone line up.
Wooden desks and chairs are pushed to the side. Everyone stands. Today, they flip the lyrics on a popular hip-hop song to give it an educational message.
Now watch me write. Hey. Now watch me read it.
Right.
Now watch me build my vocabulary.
Yeah.
Now watch me write.
Hey.
Now watch me read it.
Yeah.
Now watch me build my vocabulary.
Boom, boom, boom.
Right. Clap it up, clap it up.
Clap it up, clap it up, clap it up.
Thank you, people. Okay. Peace out.
Look, we have company, right? We have a guest. So we're going to be on our best behavior. Show them how.
That's Tamika Bowers, one of the volunteers in the after-school program. She's 42 with short, dark hair and boundless energy. Her son Tayan is 10 years old and in fourth grade. When the program's over, we walk across the street to the public housing complex where Tamika and her son live. As soon as we open the door, the aroma of dinner greets me.
I made pork chops.
You made pork chops?
I fried them. I did macaroni and cheese and some collard greens.
And
nice and
also, I always be eating meat first.
And they love it. They love it. I gotta keep the kids happy. I don't do fast food.
Tamika is a single mom of two. But no matter how hard she tries to give Tayan and his brother a good life, she can't fix one thing. Nearly 600 trucks rumble past the school and their apartment complex every day.
Every time you turn around, you're getting sick. You can't breathe down here. You got to keep your windows closed because other than that, the films, all the bad smells coming in here, it's too much.
A couple of years ago, Tayan had a serious scare.
I'm looking at his face and I'm looking at his chest, how his chest was moving. And I see he was fighting to breathe. And I'm like, wait. That, like, to me, like, asthma attack. We going to the hospital.
Tayan was diagnosed with asthma. Now he takes steroids and uses an in-home air purifier. Tamika flips a switch on a white box connected to a tube and holds it under Tayan's nose. Fresh air pours out.
Years ago, you used to be able to open your windows and feel the same way. But not right now.
Y'all need some fresh air?
Yeah, I need it right now.
How's it feel?
Sound better.
This purifier releases clean air not found outside. He uses it about 4 times a week.
Well, the way I breathe, it just feels uncomfortable sometimes. It just feel like a struggle. Just struggling a lot on this line that's supposed to be easy.
I wish I could breathe a lot more better.
A lot of things can trigger asthma. Air pollution is just one cause. Professor Ed Abel studies air quality and respiratory function at the University of Southern California.
So the studies that we've done have shown that for children that live close to busy roadways, that it does have an impact on their health.
Abel says being exposed to busy roads can affect kids' lungs as they grow.
I kind of think of it like, you know, growing a tree in the backyard. If you tie the tree back and tether it, you can change the shape of that trunk as it grows. And that's sort of what happens with children's lungs, for example.
The pollution can keep young lungs from growing. Abel continues with his tree analogy.
For children that grow up in more polluted areas, they don't grow, in a sense, straight and tall in terms of achieving the maximal growth of their lung health. What they do is tend to be a little stunted. They tend to curve and grow. And our concern is that over the course of years, that sort of slight change in the growth trajectory becomes sort of permanent. And we have no information that suggests that they jump up and somehow catch up again.
That's something that worries Tamika. A recent study found that people in Newark were being hospitalized for asthma at a rate that was 2.5 times higher than the rest of the state. That's for all ages.
Living down here, you go to hospital every other week. And it's sad. It's sad. A lot of kids missing school because of asthma.
She's lived on Hawkins Street for 15 years. Tamika also has severe asthma. When she talks, you can hear her struggle. She has a rescue inhaler that she tucks under her pillow. She uses it almost every night. As we talk, Tamika feels like she's running out of breath and gets the inhaler.
When you take it, then I put it on Hella, shake it. You're supposed to take a deep breath in, out. You take this and you suck it in. Hold your breath for a couple of minutes. Then you exhale. And then you take another deep breath. That's how you do that. Go up after that. Go in the bathroom, put some water in your face. Take a deep breath. I try to lay back down at night. This right here. It's a lifesaver.
Even though the school is convenient, if she could afford it, she says she'd move someplace.
Where they go outside and they could run, they could play, come in, eat, take their bath, and go to bed. Not have to take medication every day. That right there is sad. Because sometimes if that medication not doing just enough, you know you got to make a hospital visit. Who wants an emergency room? As a mother, you see a child not breathing, you be like, why? Why me? What did I do? Did I do something to cause this? But in a real fact, for the parents that out there, it's not your fault. It's not.
So whose fault is it? Part of the blame, old diesel trucks and what comes out of their pipes, something called ultrafine particles. Research suggests they can slip into the bloodstream, bringing toxic materials with them. At Tayan School, that's the kind of danger he and other students face constantly. Districts across the country face similar problems. Nearly one in five schools that opened in 2014 was located near a heavily trafficked road.
To just have trucks like this, it's really not good. In this location right here, we did a truck count. Right here, we actually stood a little bit there, and within an hour, 200 to 300 trucks traveled just at this location.
Kim Gaddy is a local environmental activist. We met at one of New York's busiest intersections. It's about 15 minutes away from Hawkins Street School.
Too many polluting facilities have been allowed to be placed next to schools, next to homes. Too many of the corridors for trucks have been allowed to happen close to our parks, close to our schools. On this block alone, there's probably about 8 different recycling companies. So with recycling companies comes what? Trucks. So you got that sniff. Whew.
What is that?
That is the diesel. That's the pollution. Come on, let's cross the street. You want to take it?
Kim wants me to get a closer look, so we jump in her car and drive out to see what brings all these trucks into the area.
You in?
Yeah.
If you look back here, you see all the port, see? All of the trucks and containers that come from the port. And one block removed, and you see some of the truck industries, companies, but the housing is right here. It's not like it's 3-4 blocks, or it's one block in, see? And this is a house, so it's one block in. And then these are different industries, trucking industries, trading industries. Oftentimes, we don't even know what's coming here. Some of these are painting facilities that are emitting different smells. These are houses. Individuals live right here.
We pass housing projects and another school. The people in this community are mostly African American and Latino. That's something we see happening nationwide. Schools that serve largely minority students are found near busy roads at more than 3 times the rate of schools that serve mostly white students. Most of the trucks that come to Newark serve the port of New York and New Jersey. It's the largest port on the eastern seaboard, and about 9,000 trucks come here each day.
The port is the economic engine for the region, but what it is for us, it's a death zone.
A death zone. Kim would know. She witnessed her brother-in-law die in the street from an asthma attack. She also had a cousin who suffered an attack, made it to the hospital, but died. Kim is Newark born and raised and has asthma herself, as do each of her 3 children.
And so it's very personal to me. We believed Port Authority when they agreed to a ban on the older trucks.
In 2010, the Port Authority said that it would ban trucks built before 2007 because they're dirtier than those built afterwards. That would have meant that trucks passing by Newark schools would have higher environmental standards. But the Port Authority later changed its mind, saying they needed more time to phase in the new rules and money to help truck drivers get new rigs.
Well, I don't have no more room to store nothing.
Oh, this is a big mess they have here. One step at a time. Okay.
Gabriel Procel owns and drives one of those older, dirtier rigs, built in 1999. He's 58 and has worked as a truck driver for 20 years. Gabriel is short and stocky, with a weathered face covered in stubble. He's wearing faded jeans and a stocking cap pulled low over his forehead. I climb into his rig, and Gabriel shows me part of his route.
Every morning. This is my second house. I spend at least 12 hours a day in my truck. Are you ready?
Yes.
You have your helmet and your... This is an old truck, so it's very loud and you know how it is.
I ride shotgun. Gabriel has a cooler tucked at his side with today's lunch. At my feet, a plastic crate with a jumble of cables and spare lights. On the windshield, a sticker of the Virgin of Guadalupe.
There's critics that say that your truck is part of the problem. How would you respond?
When they see big trucks, they see a smoke. I can't say nothing. I can't hide it either because I'm a big truck, so I just go as long as nobody says nothing or nobody throws stones to me. I just keep going because I know it's a problem.
Gabriel would like to have a new truck, but he says he needs help from the government to get a loan.
Well, accessible loans to buy trucks, regardless of the credit. If you are a truck driver, you should have access to lower interest loans. That's the only way people can go and buy drugs.
A state lawmaker plans to introduce a bill that would set aside $25 million to help truck drivers like Gabriel. If the bill fails, Gabriel says as an independent contractor, there's no way he could afford to buy a new rig on his own.
This engine has 800,000 miles. It almost gets to the million mile. I stay with this one up to the end of my working days. And I'm going to retire peaceful, knowing that I did that move America, because everything is delivered by truck. So they should be giving us trucks for free. If they say firefighters and police are heroes, truckers too. Nobody recognizes that.
In the meantime, Gabriel and hundreds of other drivers with older trucks will continue to pass by Hawkins Street, where Tayan Bowers goes to school. His mom, Tamika, says it's time for the community to put a stop to the pollution affecting their kids.
It's up to us to make a change, try to make it different, show them we do matter. You know what I'm saying? Like this right here, we don't have to accept this. But we've been accepting it for far too long because people don't want to come out and speak opening mouth. So therefore, people, open your mouth. Let's go. Make a change. It's not for me, it's not for you, it's for our children and for our future.
That story from Fernanda Camarena. You can hear how riled up residents like Tamika are. But is anything going to change? To talk about that, let's bring in Jamie Hopkins. She's a reporter at the Center for Public Integrity who partnered with us on today's show. And Jamie, why did you choose to look at this school in Newark?
Yeah, Newark has a lot of schools near busy roads because it has a lot of busy roads. It's right next to New York City. There's a big port there. There's an airport. So there's a lot of sources of transportation pollution in addition to cars and trucks.
You counted around 8,000 public schools near busy roads. How did you define a busy road?
Either a road that gets at least 30,000 total vehicles a day on average, or it has 10,000 plus vehicles a day on it, at least 500 of which are trucks. And that's because diesel, particularly old diesel trucks, are a well-documented problem in terms of air pollution and health impacts. So we wanted to make sure that we could account for these roads that have more trucks, even if they don't meet the 30,000 threshold. We got a really helpful calculation from the Texas A&M Transportation Institute that looks at the typical mix of vehicles on the roads today. And they found that a heavy-duty diesel truck on a highway puts out 63 times the fine particle pollution of a gasoline car.
What about the rest of the country? What was the data you put together on that?
Well, we found schools near busy roads all across the country. You know, more common in big cities, as you would expect. Definitely more common in big cities. But you can find it in smaller cities and in suburbs of all sizes, even in rural areas and towns. So this is a nationwide problem. You know, talking to folks, it seems like this is not one that's really on the radar of school systems. They've got so many things to think about. They're not really thinking about the issue of roads and what's coming off the roads.
Why are so many schools located near these busy roads?
Well, it seems like a mix of things. I mean, some folks tell us that cost plays a role, that school districts are looking for the cheapest option, and sometimes that just happens to be the land smack dab by a highway or other sorts of heavy traffic. Sometimes it's just hard to find land that isn't close to a busy road. Looking at the map of New York City, you can see how it'd be really challenging, for instance. Sometimes a school was built first and the highway came later, but part of the problem seems to be that school officials largely don't seem to realize there is a problem. Traffic pollution is invisible. The decades of research about its effect on people the measurements showing that it's higher near roads. This is, doesn't seem to be very well known outside of public health circles and environmental health advocates. So if you don't know the air is worse near a busy road, you might see that location as a plus because it's easy to get to. Some of the schools we looked at, what's closest to the road are the playgrounds or the athletic fields, and the air filters in your building won't help there.
Schools that serve largely minority students are found near busy roads more than three times the rate of schools that serve mostly white students. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, we wondered that. And what we found is that where students live is important. And big cities are have higher numbers of minority students, lower numbers of white students than, say, the rural areas. But one thing that could get lost in this is the reason why people live where they live is something that is influenced in many ways by decisions that were made decades ago. You know, some of the discriminatory decisions about where people were allowed to live and also where busy roads and highways would be built still seem to be having ripple effects. And we talked to some experts about, you know, how that continues to affect where people live and where they go to school. It's a problem for everybody, but certainly health researchers are more concerned about what this means for kids.
Thanks, Jamie. That's Jamie Hopkins from the Center for Public Integrity. We'll hear more from her later in the show. And right about now, you may be wondering, what's going on with my kid's school?
I think as parents, it's hard for us to recognize that we have placed our children in maybe a place of endangerment when we had the best intentions.
How one mom went on a mission to clear the air at her kid's school. When we come back, this is Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.
Hey listeners, Julia B. Chan here, Reveal's digital editor. I want all the Reveal superfans to stop what you're doing and listen to a pretty cool deal we've got going on right now. We're offering up an exclusive first listen of our next new episode to one new Twitter follower. So if you don't follow us there already, think about it. We'll randomly select one of you and send you a password-protected link to the latest episode of Reveal before anyone else gets to hear it. We're only doing this for a couple weeks, so now is your chance to win. To enter, just open up your Twitter app on your phone and give us a follow. We're at Reveal.
From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Ledson. Before the break, we heard how traffic pollution was affecting schools in Newark, New Jersey. Now we head to Southern California, a place that makes you think of the glamour of Hollywood, the sway of palm trees, and a cool, fresh breeze blowing off the Pacific Ocean. But for the kids in El Marino Elementary School in Culver City, that cool breeze is not what they smell. And those few miles between the Pacific Ocean and the school is a freeway, and not just any freeway, the 405. The busiest freeway in the United States, and one of the busiest sections of that freeway, is right next to the school. Our reporter, Amy Walters, drove through LA traffic to find out what these kids thought about the freeway in their backyard.
What about the freeway air? Do you notice that at all? Do you even hear the freeway noise?
No, not very much.
We rarely hear the cars driving when we're all the way here.
There's a big, tall, concrete sound wall that keeps the freeway, even the massive 405, pretty much hidden away. The wall is right by the kindergarten classroom. And that's where Amy meets up with Mike Reynolds, the business manager for Culver City Schools.
So this is the kindergarten, and I think we're pretty much at the closest point between the school and the freeway, right?
Well, that's the freeway wall right there. I'd say it can be more than, 50, 60 feet maximum.
Like three car lengths, something like that?
Yeah, just right in that neighborhood.
El Marino Elementary is within 500 feet of the 405. Now, that would go against state guidelines if the school were built today. But what makes this school different from the one we heard about in New Jersey is inside these classrooms, the kids are breathing filtered air.
So this was our first system, and the central component was the MERV 16 filtration. MERV 16 filter is designed to remove the smallest particles.
This project has been 6 years in the making. Inside each room is a large blue heating unit hanging from the ceiling. Inside the units, which were installed in the 1970s and look like it, are highly sensitive filters. But the project isn't entirely finished. I'll let Amy take it from here.
First, I have to introduce you to Rania Sabti Daly. She's a mom, a scientist, and the woman a lot of parents here credit as the miracle worker who got this project almost done.
You must be Amy.
Yes.
I'm Rania.
Nice to meet you.
Hi, nice to meet you as well. Come on in.
Thank you.
Arriving at Rania's house, it's way more beach bungalow than McMansion. But this is Southern California real estate, and none of it's cheap.
These are my children, Seth.
Hi.
He's in his first year of college.
Okay.
And he's 18.
Hi.
This is Noah, who just finished being at the school 2 years ago. He's in seventh grade now. And he's 12. Luke, can you say hi to Amy?
Hi.
They all went to El Marino.
They all play music. The kids put on a mini concert for me. And they all have golden locks lightened by the Southern California sun. They look a lot like that 90s band, Hanson. But for these guys, it's more guitar rock, less bop.
I would grade it high because of the language. And I think that I can definitely tell now in middle school how it helped people learn more.
Noah was part of the Spanish immersion program. The school also has Japanese all the way through sixth grade. El Marino's been rated as one of the top public elementary schools in the state. Rania's kids had been there for years before she decided to do something about the air.
When I got interested during the year of 2011, it was just a time in my life where my children had been at El Marino for a long time. They're 12, 15, and 18 now, and they all have been to El Marino, and I loved that school.
But she also knew how close it was to the freeway, and she was worried. See, Rania grew up in a home with smokers. She has asthma herself, and she saw it affecting her growing sons, too.
I've always had asthma.
That's Seth, the oldest.
We don't know if it was started by me, you know, playing around and being outside next to that freeway during my elementary school years. I don't know. I still have some asthma issues sometimes.
A lot of things can trigger asthma. Air pollution is just one cause, and we don't have the exact data on how traffic pollution is affecting the kids at El Marino. We might not ever know. But at lunchtime on one very hazy day, I took a very non-scientific poll. Does anyone here have asthma? I asked.
Well, he has asthma, and he has asthma, and his dad and his older brother.
That dude over there has asthma.
That dude over there. He also has asthma. Hi, do you have asthma? You have asthma, babe?
Oh. I have.
Do you think it's a lot of kids with asthma? Or?
Let go.
I think there's a lot of people with asthma.
My mom moved me out because of the 405.
9-year-old Ashley Brown is here with her mother to pick up her younger brother. Her mom, Christina Dronin, took Ashley out of El Marino a year and a half ago.
Just the studies I read were really freaking me out, like the increased chances of cancer. And like, I just thought if something were to happen to her and she got one of those rare cancers related to freeway pollution, I couldn't live with it. People are like, well, it's LA. LA's polluted. That's just living in LA. And I'm like, no, like 10 to 20 times worse. But people just didn't want to acknowledge it because it is the best school in Culver City. And so I think it was, in my opinion, a little bit of choosing to put their head in the sand.
Christina says she's okay with her son going to El Marino now that the school has installed the new filters. Back at Rania's house, she also acknowledges that for a lot of the parents, realizing what the pollution was doing was hard to face.
I think as parents, it's hard for us to recognize that we have placed our children in maybe a place of endangerment when we had the best intentions.
But rather than taking her kids out of El Marino, Rania went searching for a way to improve the air so the kids could stay.
I'm very aware of the fact that we had, I suppose, privileges that may not be privileges that others' school and communities may have.
And it wasn't just money. It was time, energy, and Rania's expertise.
I have a PhD in environmental health sciences.
that I earned at UCLA, and I have a master's in public health.
Rania's own background in science, that was the big advantage.
So I started asking questions. Answers were difficult to define, but I'm a researcher and I don't give up.
First, she started looking back to see what testing had been done already. Back in 2000, the air was tested at the park near the school.
But the park is further from the freeway than the school is. The school was never even mentioned. The fact that there were sensitive receptors in that school, children, was completely skipped over.
A few years later, the teachers at El Marino complained about the dust and asked for more testing.
The people who were asked to come do the evaluation, they measured lead on windowsills instead.
So Rania helped start a group of parents and teachers. Clean Air El Marino, they called it. And they did it themselves, borrowing expertise and equipment from USC, UCLA, and the South Coast Air Quality Management, really anyone who would listen. They ran their own tests of the pollution in the air.
And we looked at ultrafine particles, and we started right next to the freeway, under the freeway, crossed the street, entered the school, and took measurements.
This is what they found.
The school is not protected by any magical wall or sound wall or anything. A lot of people, administrators, parents, thought the sound wall would really protect us from particles. And I thought that measurement was going to be something that was going to show if they were right or wrong. And it did.
They were wrong. The sound wall wasn't protecting the kids. The children at El Marino were being exposed to the airborne pollutants from the 405. This was a huge problem. And now they had to find a solution.
And one option was to think about moving the school to another campus somewhere in the city where it'd be further away from the freeway.
They actually considered moving the school.
We contemplated that. We pitched it a little bit. There was no traction there.
Both the school and the freeway, it seemed, were there to stay. So Rania kept looking, and it turns out there was another school, also by a freeway, just a little farther south in Long Beach. And they'd figured out how to clean the air in the classrooms. Air filters, MERV 16 air filters. They're often used in hospitals, and they're pretty easy to install. And they take 90% of the pollutants, smoke, bacteria, that kind of thing, out of the air.
So we found that there was a solution. Right? So we were excited that we were going to get somewhere. If we could bring these filters to our school, we could clean up the air.
Rania was smart when it came to the science, but there was also a political battle to wage. The residents weren't too excited about what her findings meant for their property values. But where there's a will, there's more testing on the way.
Rania was able to get some precision instruments from some universities.
That's Mike Reynolds, who you heard from earlier, the business manager for the Culver City School District. He says the data Rania came up with was real science, and it made it hard for the school board to look away.
Rania requested a meeting with the superintendent and myself and came and presented her case.
And soon after, Mike was working with Rania to get the first filter installed. It was a pilot, so there was more testing to be done.
After we installed the unit, Rania came out with the devices and measured the ultrafine particulates and found that about 90% of the ultrafine particulates were removed.
It was documented now. With the filters in and the doors and windows closed, the kids could be a lot safer at school. All they needed now was the money to put the filters in the rest of the buildings. The Culver City School District had an initiative called the Whole Child.
So being very involved, we knew about that, and we were very quick to seize it as an opportunity to say, you know, health and safety is part of the child, and that they breathe clean air is part of health and safety. And if you care for the health of the children and the whole child, then this should be important to you. And they said yes.
The school district introduced a bond measure on the Culver City ballot, allocating over $100 million for city schools. And it passed. The money was there. And the filters were installed. But even now, the battle isn't entirely won. A lot of schools, like El Marino, don't have air conditioning. Opening the windows and doors, it's usually good enough to keep cool, But that's a problem when the breeze is full of exhaust. Mike Reynolds says there's only one more thing El Merino needs, and that's almost done.
So the air filtration is in, it's working. We submitted plans to the Department of State Architect to install air conditioning, and that will allow us to maximize the efficiency of the air filtration system. Basically, if the doors are closed, you get, you know, like 90% of the particulates out of the air.
That's happening? I mean, it's budgeted? It's
budgeted. It's happening. Luckily, the community passed our Measure CC bond, and that helped us fund these improvements.
Good.
Yeah, definitely good.
Yeah, very helpful. Good for people's health. That's good.
Those are Rania's sons again. They seem pleased with the work she's done. But now, they've moved on.
None of us were really there still at the school, so it didn't really have an effect on us.
I was definitely thinking, like, why haven't they done it already? Because it's kind of a clear problem. And, I mean, you're right next to the freeway, so I think they should have addressed that issue earlier.
But for Rania, it's not just about her kids.
I understand asthma very well. My children have faced it at times. We've had our struggles, but they're not the reason why this is happening. I believe in the health of the other children. This is beyond my children, and this is beyond myself. And that's why I'm in it.
And about the air outside, on the playground, filters won't work there. But they are talking about a warning system that keeps kids in class on those days when the LA smog gets really bad.
That's the next project, I think.
That story was from Reveal's Amy Walters. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm starting to freak out a little bit because my kid's school is close to a really busy road. Let's bring back Jamie Hopkins, who reports on the environment from the Center for Public Integrity. Jamie, what can I do as a parent to make sure my kids are safe from this kind of pollution?
Well, one thing you might do is check to see how close is it to the road, really. Usually, the farther away you get, the better off. 500 feet away, that is generally better than being 200 or 100 feet away. The story that Amy Walters tells out of California is examples of what parents did. They were doing things like cleaning the classrooms, and they were able to do things all along the way that made some differences, even as they were waiting just to deal with the traffic pollution that was getting inside. So there are things that parents can do.
California has guidelines that say schools can't be built this close to freeways. Do you think that nationally that should be adopted?
People have talked about the rule in California as one that has loopholes. There have been some schools built near freeways since then, because what it's intending is trying to keep the schools away, but also sort of acknowledging that sometimes maybe you don't have a lot of good options. At the very least, though, what this has done is put it on schools' radar that, you know, maybe you should be considering other spots. You know, if you really literally don't have an option, you're going to really want to be thinking about how can we mitigate? If we have to build something here, or if we already have schools in these sites, what can we do about it?
Are there other solutions out there?
Some of the other things I've heard suggested include things like where you put the air intake, the part of the building that's pulling in the outdoor air. Obviously, you don't want to put that near the road or near a loading dock. Pay attention to the times of busy traffic and make sure that you don't have outdoor activities scheduled at that point. Or, for instance, maybe the maintenance people can pull in outdoor air overnight. Depending on the area, it might be cleaner at that point rather than pulling in first thing in the morning when maybe you're dealing with rush hour traffic right next to you.
Are schools implementing these strategies to try and clean the air up for the kids?
We had a hard time finding schools that were really aware of this. It's much more common in Southern California because, you know, they've been struggling with air pollution from traffic for a long time there. There are some examples that we could find of schools, you know, sort of becoming aware of this. There's a case in Utah, for instance, where a busy road was going to be built near a number of schools. And so parents got concerned, they organized, and the state agreed to do air monitoring and put in high-grade filters at those schools. People worked something out. They felt really good about it, didn't come to a lawsuit. And so that gave parents some assurance that the road was not going to harm their kids.
So, Jamie, we can't end this conversation without talking about the EPA. In the past, you know, during the Obama administration, what was the federal government doing about these schools and traffic pollution overall?
Well, the EPA put out a guide to try to help schools become aware of traffic pollution issues and get a sense of what they might be able to do about it. Of course, that was voluntary because it was a guide. Over the years, the EPA has done a variety of things on traffic pollution generally. And as a result, cars and trucks are a lot cleaner now than they were a generation or two generations or three generations ago. New diesel trucks are a lot cleaner than old diesel trucks. But a lot of the trucks on the road predate standards that kicked in with the 2007 model year, because diesel engines are long-lived. They'll be on the road a long time. The EPA has grants to help people retrofit or replace old diesel vehicles, things like trucks and school buses. But the funding runs out this year, and so it's sort of unclear what's going to happen with that.
And now that Donald Trump is the president and the EPA head has changed, what do you think is going to happen there?
Yeah, it doesn't look like the stage is set for an aggressive crackdown on traffic pollution or any sort of air pollution. President Trump has already said he thinks environmental regulations are out of control. In fact, the officially put in charge of the EPA transition has called for deep cuts at the agency.
Jamie, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it.
Jamie Hopkins is with the Center for Public Integrity based in Washington, D.C. When we come back, we head to Chicago, where students and community activists are going high-tech to keep an eye on air pollution. This is Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.
Hey folks, Cole Goins here from Reveal. Last week, President Trump claimed that he didn't think the Dakota Access Pipeline was controversial.
I haven't had one call from anybody.
That's the same pipeline that has drawn tens of thousands of protesters to the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation in North Dakota. One reason Trump may not have gotten any calls about it? The White House comment line is currently closed. So we created a new number you can call to tell Reveal what you'd like Trump to know about the pipeline. We've gotten more than 150 voicemails so far. And almost all of the callers have spoken out against the pipeline.
Hello, my name is Brendan Green. I'm just calling to say that I am opposed to him taking any chances with the drinking water of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe by building a pipeline through there. And he's got a lot of nerve getting on there complaining that nobody has called him to object about it when he's got his phone line disconnected so that nobody can call him.
My name is Sydney Brown. I live in Farmington, New Mexico. I work for the Navajo Nation. I am Native American. I don't need oil. I do need water. We all need water. Water is life.
Are you pro-pipeline? We want to hear from you, too. To share your thoughts on any side of the issue, call 701-289-9353. We'll collect all the voicemails and make sure they get to the White House. We may feature a few on our website, radio show, or right here on the podcast. That number again, 701-289-9353.
From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. We head now to the south side of Chicago, where 17-year-old Eve Robinson is getting ready to start her day.
It is Monday morning at about 6 o'clock. I know this because my alarm just went off.
Eve is a senior at Whitney M. Young Magnet High School.
It's a good thing this is radio because my room is a mess.
She's also an intern at the nonprofit Environmental Law and Policy Center. Today, she's going to help them out with one of their pilot projects by carrying around a small portable sensor.
As you can see right here, it just is, it's probably about 4x4. It's a square.
That little black box is the size of a handheld video game, and it spits out information about the tiny particles in the air she breathes.
It's really easy because all you need is an Android phone to be able to connect to it and get the data.
The data will help measure air quality everywhere Eve goes today. The Environmental Law and Policy Center is collecting the information so they can let residents and city officials know where the worst air in the city is. With the center's sensor and our audio recorder, we're going to eavesdrop on a day in the life of a teenager's lungs in the city.
I am currently leaving the house.
Holding the sensor at chest level, she walks to the bus.
Okay, so I'm getting on the bus.
Route 28, Stony Island to Union Station.
Her gear attracts side eyes from a few people around her.
And to some, it might look like I'm either A, talking to myself, or B, just a weirdo with a microphone.
Then Eve transfers to the elevated blue line train, where she sees a surprise on the sensor.
While I was recording, inside the train station itself, the level spiked, which is kind of ridiculous.
Inside the train station, the air is thick with dust and exhaust, particles that are 1/30th the width of a single strand of hair. The particles enter the lungs and are known triggers for asthma. Now, that's a big concern in a city where hospitals emit almost twice the national average of patients for asthma attacks. Those stats have made Chicago an important laboratory for projects like Eve's to track hotspots for air pollution and help people navigate around them. Reveal's Ike Sriskandaraja went to Chicago to check out several of these projects.
Let's catch up with Eve. She's now at school and carrying her sensor that pulls in air readings every second. It's a device that costs a couple $100, but it can give you a pretty good idea about air quality. Eve doesn't have asthma, but the information her sensor picks up could help her classmate Kimani Walker, who does.
Can you just tell me a little bit about what that experience is like when you have an asthma attack?
The high school seniors huddle over the audio recorder in a noisy hallway before class.
Okay, so you're trying to breathe and you can feel your lungs moving. You have a tightening in your chest. And it's really scary because you don't know what's happening. And I was rushed to the emergency room and they cut open my shirt. They put the oxygen on and then passed in. I blacked out. So I have to say it's one of the scariest things that you can ever experience.
To Kimani, who always carries her inhaler, it feels like drowning on dry land. According to the Environmental Law and Policy Center, there are 29 schools in the Chicago area that are right next to an expressway. Eve's is one of them. Between classes, she wonders how much of the traffic exhaust is getting inside.
Well, I mean, it might be different in different places. Also, kind of want to see inside the school building since most students spend like 6 hours a year, so yeah.
Eve takes her monitor to class.
I'll see you.
We'll meet up again after school with a pediatrician who will interpret the information her device picks up throughout the day. In the meantime, I head to another part of town where another experiment to track air quality is going on.
Hey, nice to meet you.
I meet up with Kim Wasserman. She grew up in Chicago and now runs an environmental justice organization. She gives me a tour of her neighborhood, Little Village. It's known as the Mexico of the Midwest, because people come from all over to buy Mexican goods here.
So we actually do pretty well as a community when it comes to economic generation, but we don't do so well when it comes to air quality, unfortunately.
Case in point, a red brick schoolhouse in the front yard of a large factory.
So this right here is Zapata Elementary School. In the background, you can see that three-story building right there. Mm-hmm. That's the Hellman's plant.
That mayonnaise factory has been here for about 100 years, and now it plans to expand, just within breathing distance of kids at recess.
And so what'll eventually happen is the plant's going to literally grow right behind the school and actually encroach all the way around the school. And those littlest babies with forming lungs are going to be closest to that air pollution.
Kim is measuring the air quality now, so she can figure out if it gets worse after the factory expands.
And so that's why this air monitoring project is so crucially important for us right now, because this would be the first time that we could actually have science in hand and be able to prove that what we feel, right, what we think, might actually be true.
Kim's is one of four neighborhood groups in Chicago that won grant money from the Environmental Protection Agency. They'll use it to buy portable and stationary sensors to record air quality. Kim wants this process of monitoring to become the norm. So whenever a business in Chicago wants to build, the city would first have to consider how much pollution that business would emit.
What we're trying to do now is make systematic change at a policy level so that no neighborhood has to go through this.
Kim's group will start monitoring this spring. The project will give people in Little Village a neighborhood-wide map of air pollution. Another project will offer Chicagoans a bigger picture of how the whole city is breathing. And this is where it starts. even though people walking around might not realize it.
This is a busy intersection in beautiful downtown Chicago. And I'm standing underneath a shoebox-sized attachment to the top of the lamppost, probably like 20 feet up the air. Can I ask you, what do you think that thing is up there?
What thing?
You see that white beehive-shaped thing?
Yeah.
What do you think that is?
I'm not sure. Maybe a camera, maybe like some kind of tracking device.
It's more of a scientific tracking device. A first-of-its-kind super sensor that measures all kinds of data. Ultraviolet rays, traffic vibrations, magnetic fields, and air quality.
We are probably the first city that has a device that measures this many things.
Charlie Catlett is the computer scientist who helped build the data collectors as part of a project called the Array of Things. He's overseeing the installation of 500 nodes on new lampposts during the next 2 years. The nodes will be able to track the gases people breathe and the tiniest irritants, like soot particles, up to bigger ones, like pollen. All the information they collect, Charlie says, will be public.
When people say, well, what access will we have? The answer is immediate, full, free. The part that I feel excited about is the ability to give data to that person in a way that helps them navigate the city.
It's part of a bigger push from Mayor Rahm Emanuel to put Chicago in the vanguard of data-driven city planning. Picture it. You wake up and read an alert about high levels of ragweed on your commute. So if you're allergic to bat pollen, you decide not to ride your bike that day. Or you're walking through the city and you get a notification that you're headed for a diesel particulate hotspot. Detour, take a different route. This could happen in Chicago's near future. And not just here. Charlie thinks as many as 100 cities may host their own Array of Things within 5 years.
I think we're not at the very beginning, but I think we're in the early stages of a lot of sensor activity.
And it starts with putting devices in the hands of residents, like high school senior Eve Robinson. Speaking of, school's out, and Eve's at the University of Chicago Children's Hospital.
This is Eve Robinson.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Giles.
Oh, hi, hi.
Yeah. Hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Eve took her data to Dr. Louise Giles, a respiratory specialist.
So what kind of numbers have you been seeing with it?
It's been interesting. It's been kind of all over.
Eve opens up her laptop, where she's loaded her data into a spreadsheet. It turns out her readings from school were nothing to worry about.
We were surprised, actually, by how low it was.
But there was that spike in fine particles near the train station where Eve transferred on her way to school.
So that was really high, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the hard part, right? Not knowing about what you're being exposed to in these little, what we'd call microenvironments, where this might be high. Let's say if you had asthma, would you change your commute to school based on what you've seen?
I think that I might, when it's warmer weather, even if it's more humid, then I might decide to, instead of taking the blue line, I might take the bus instead and find a different route.
Policymakers might one day use sensors to design a data-driven path forward for city planning. In the meantime, Eve and her classmates can now use it to decide what path to take to school.
That was Reveal's Ike Sriskandaraja. Thanks to Eve Robinson for keeping and sharing her audio diary. Today's show was edited by Deb George and Cheryl Duvall. Amy Walters was our lead producer. This week's production team includes Fernanda Camarena, Ike Sriskandaraja, Mwenda Hasey, and Julia B. Chan. Senior data reporter Eric Segarra helped crunch the numbers for our story on school pollution. The Center for Public Integrity partnered with us on today's show, including reporter Jamie Hopkins and editors Chris Zubakskis and Jim Morris. CPI receives support for their story from the Dennis A. Hunt Fund for Health Journalism and the National Fellowship. Both programs are the University of Southern California's Center for Health Journalism. Our sound design team is the Wonder Twins, my man, Jay Breezy, Mr. Jim Briggs, and Claire C. Nope Mullen, with help from Catherine Ray Mondo. Our head of studio is Krista Scharfenberg. Amy Powell is our editor-in-chief. Suzanne Reber is our executive editor, and our executive producer is Kevin Sullivan. Our theme music is by Camarado, Lightning. Support for Reveal is provided by the Reva and David Logan Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, and the Ethics and Excellence in Journalism Foundation. Reveal is a co-production of the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. I'm Al Letson. And remember, there is always more to the story.